Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Hello, Ivy Podcast listeners. Thank you guys so much, as always, for tuning into today's Ivy Podcast episode. I am your host, Angela Alberti. Very excited to sit down with Peter Tannenbaum today. We're going to be going through a lot of things specific to talent acquisition, this wonderful world of recruiting that we are a part in. So if you are involved in that talent ecosystem, this is certainly an episode that I hope you guys can tune into. He brings a wealth of knowledge within the recruiting and staffing space and has been in the game, as the cool kids say, for quite some time. So we are honored to sit down with Peter this afternoon, this morning, wherever you are listening from in your unique part of the world. Before we get started, I'd like to give a quick reminder to our audience. Give us a rating on the App Store. Give us some stars. Give us some feedback. Let us know truly what you think about the Ivy Podcast and the episodes that you guys are listening and tuning into. It helps us get in front of more listeners, and we really take that feedback seriously as we are growing the Ivy Podcast channel. So without further ado, I would love to introduce Peter. Peter, tell us a little bit about yourself.
First off, I really want to thank you, Angela, for taking the time. Big fan of the Ivy Podcast. I listen to a lot of episodes. I really find them across the board. I mean, the content really is really, really strong. And I appreciate, and I'm a little bit humbled to actually be appearing and be a guest on the podcast. So Peter Tannenbaum from RE/MAX Search. RE/MAX Search is a boutique executive search firm located in Midtown Manhattan, although our practice is really national at this point. I myself have been in the staffing industry for a little over 30 years at this point, really kind of cover a whole slew of different areas. Primarily, about two-thirds of what we do is really financial services focused, commercial banks, investment banks, hedge funds, private equity, venture capital, asset managers, insurance, real estate. About a third is a little bit more general type stuff. In terms of the roles that we specialize in, again, about two-thirds to three-quarters is really more, you know, financial support focused, accounting, finance, operations, trade support, and up and down the vertical. So CFO, COO, general counsels, legal risk compliance. And about a third is really more, you know, front office focused, especially in financial services, business development, sales, marketing, M&A managers, portfolio managers, things along those lines. And again, up and down the entire vertical. So from the most senior to, you know, the mid-director level type stuff, primarily.
That's a pretty interesting, you know, scope of work that you guys have done. You've been this entrepreneur now for 30 years within the recruiting space, servicing one of the largest financial sectors in the world, speaking, you know, within the New York City and Manhattan regions that you guys service in. But I know that y'all are national, you know, you guys service clients everywhere now. So I'm sure that that's only a testament to how you've seen the world of recruiting evolve. Tell us a little bit about that, your take on where you started, which I want to say, as before we recorded, it was 1991, and how that talent and recruiting space has evolved into what it is now.
Yeah, so it's a great question. And there are so many changes. I think to look at it though, in a big picture, the recruiting world has changed, but only because the business world has changed so much, right? In terms of how we work, the way we want to work, how we see ourselves kind of fitting into the bigger picture. And our role as middlemen really is kind of, you know, how to consult along that process to ensure that our clients are hiring not only the best talent, but the best fit talent, and that our candidates are taking, you know, jobs that are the best fit for them. And I'll kind of expand on that maybe now or even a little bit later. But I think it's important to kind of recognize, you know, when I started this industry a little over 30 years ago, if a candidate had two jobs in 10 years, they were looked at as being a horrible job jumper, and they'd be bouncing all over the place, and clients wouldn't even want to interview them. Now, when we see candidates that have two jobs in 10 years, clients look at us and say, oh my God, what's wrong with this candidate? Can't they find another job? Don't they have any career ambitions? So just thinking about the way people work, now figuring out our role as, you know, as middlemen in this process, you know, it's nothing for clients to say, okay, we'll take a candidate that had 6 months into the job or 2 years into the job. Now, obviously, you know, we don't want to see candidates leaving every 6 months or 2 years, but it's a lot more explainable. And I think, you know, so the first thing that's changed is the amount of jobs that people just take, number one. Number two, I think, you know, over 30 years, we've really seen the difference where people used to go to work to earn a paycheck. However, I think now people are really looking to do quote unquote meaningful work with a paycheck attached to it. So we see all the time where candidates don't take the most, you know, highest paying job, or clients will say, well, this person really, we could pay them the most, but are they going to be the best fit for us? And our job as middlemen, as part of that consultative process, is to really kind of help those two worlds kind of come together. So I think, you know, the second part is really figuring out fit and how do we consult, you know, towards that, you know, in terms of the way the market has kind of changed. I think one of the things that's pretty interesting is right now, it's a fairly, you know, it's a very, very busy time in the recruiting space. Coming out of 2020, especially for the middle part from March through October, November, where there was really very little going on. Fourth quarter last year, first quarter 2021, continuing all the way through now, it's incredibly busy. I think what's changed a little bit just even in the last year is, you know, where are people going to be working from? How we're going to get them back to work sooner rather than later. And I think a lot of it depends on geography and logistics and that type of stuff. But these are things constantly evolving. I think the biggest takeaway from that, though, which I think is the recognition that people are people and not commodities. And the days of trying to figure out how to take that square peg and always put that square peg into that square hole is a little bit kind of different in today's day and age. Now it's about finding that round peg. How do we mold them into that square peg? And how do we figure out how to kind of get that going? There are companies that build processes around this stuff. It's very, very, very hard to kind of figure that stuff out. But that's one of the, I think, the roles that we as consultants really play towards that, is helping clients really find the outliers and making them really kind of fit within the framework of an organization.
Well, I think your answer, and I'm a workforce geek, right? So it gives me the goosebump factor, because you've really encapsulated what is the essence of the future of work. You see people talking about it all the time, but it's this parsed out tenure. It's people that are finding purpose behind what they do. It's now having the capacity to expand in your talent pool to find somebody in Omaha, Nebraska, because your client needs it and you have the technology enabled to do so.
Yeah, and I mean to cut you touched on a great point, though, in terms of the use of technology as a tool towards the betterment of the recruiting process. And I appreciate you picking up on that. It's really very, very savvy. But that's exactly
my next question. Tell me a little bit about those trends, those technology trends. Sure. What are you guys utilizing that really excite you and help, you know, I'm sure in 91, you were faxing over things and
You just hit the nail on the head. I mean, you know, there was a time when a candidate, if they wanted to put together a resume, would go to a professional resume writer. They would then go to a commercial printer and they would print up, they'd show up with a box of, you know, 500 copies, and they would put together a resume once every 3 years, 5 years, 8 years, whatever it might be. And it was a hard copy they would actually take to people. Then the advent of fax machines, which is crazy to think of, oh my God, we could actually send this instantaneously or within a minute or two, somebody be able to read this, was a great development in the early mid 90s. Now, clearly, you know, in the age of instantaneous, you know, type of updating of credentials and stuff, you know, candidates keep their own resumes. They write their own resumes. I'll speak to candidates at 9 a.m. and 10 o'clock. There's a brand new resume. My 10:13, it's edited 3 times to kind of send to, you know, to send to a client to tailor for a position. So I think number one is the use of technology in terms of how we, you know, kind of use that, going from faxing to emails to now with texting. Now people posting on job boards, people having
now TikTok, right? You can resume your TikTok and get that thing posted
exactly.
Out there.
So you can. So the use of technology has really kind of gone a long way, and clearly, well, even what we're doing right now, which is, you know, the video interviewing, which has become a huge part of the process. Now we've been using it for at least the last several years. Because as I mentioned, our clients are somewhat, you know, spread out throughout the country and up and down the East Coast. But the acceleration of that throughout COVID has just kind of skyrocketed. So I'm a big believer that I don't think COVID started any of these trends that we're looking at right now in the recruiting space, in the technology space, in the work from home space, et cetera. I am a huge believer in the fact that COVID accelerated all this stuff. It really just kind of pushed made it so much. Mm-hmm. We recognize now, and though so many barriers were broken down, how easy it is to do this stuff. So, you know, we used to send candidates on interviews. They would bring a hard copy resume with them. And that was the first time a hiring manager ever saw the resume. Now, you know, they have the ability to really, the hiring companies know the candidates, at least from a resume, from a profile, probably on LinkedIn or some other job site, from some other user groups. The interview is no longer the first touch point of that process.
Yeah. And I think so often there's this connotation that technology is the big bag boogeyman when it comes to staffing and recruiting. you probably remember this, but when the dot-com bust happened and then the job board posting channels were born, like Indeed and Monster, there was this big question mark around, well, are recruiters going to become extinct now? And now it's that same sort of transition happening between AI, algorithm matching, and now technology is going to have that capacity to parse out these resumes and completely eliminate the role of the sourcer and the recruiter. But through all of that, what I know that we have seen in the evolvement of recruiting is this resiliency and the fact that, you know, staffing and recruiting is a $380 billion industry, because there's at the end of the day, there's human element tied to it. So it's only going to enhance the process to help hopefully bring the talent in quicker. And I know that you're definitely on par with that. So in 5 years, 10 years, what do you think the world of work is going to look like? What is your opinion on the future of work?
Yeah, so I'll address that in a moment, but I want to go back on something you said a moment ago about, you know, artificial intelligence and the use of that, especially from a recruiting perspective. You know, I think if we look about, you know, since I'm in this business, like, so, you know, about a little over 30 years at this point, clients have had one objective. And that one objective is to figure out how to pay less and less fees every yes. year, right?
Right.
It's crazy how that, I mean, that is like a real target. I mean, you know, companies build these huge human resource departments, these huge recruiting teams internally. And yet every year they continue to pay fees, more and more fees. And, you know, the industry right now is thriving. It mm-hmm. really is. So mm-hmm. I think gets back to what I mentioned earlier is about the decommoditization, I think, is a part of the process that we lend yes. to that. Along yes. those lines, the artificial intelligence tool is a tool. It's not the be all end all. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, recognizing that technology can replace some of the tasks, but can never replace the one-on-one contact, or can never replace the 100%. Interaction amongst people, especially in the interactive, in the meeting phase, in the interview phases, I think is really, really important. For example, right, the greatest artificial intelligence, the greatest models, the greatest whatever planners that there are could have never predicted a year and a half ago that there'd be this global pandemic that would have upset the entire world, you know, like that. Literally within, you know, a week and a half, the entire world, you know, kind of shifted. I don't know any algorithm that was able to accurately predict that. Mm-hmm. As such, you know, recognizing the human element of that, I think is very, very key. And I think when you come out of a seismic event like a COVID, like a, you know, market bubble and then burst, you know, like out of a 9/11, unfortunately, when these things happen, people, you know, change. The mm-hmm. algorithms and the artificial intelligence cannot always accurately predict that. In fact, they cannot predict it at all. I would venture that guess, although I'm sure I'd get, you know, pushback from the pure AI guys. So yeah. I think, you know, your question about where does technology and AI and kind of fit into this, I think it's important to recognize what a tool is and what an end result is. And recognizing right. that that's a tool that we might be able to use to accurately predict certain things within reason, but also recognizing that human error. Mm-hmm. The second part of that is when you come through these type of events, nobody knows how people are going to react. If you didn't come out of the last year and a half a different person than you went into it, then I think you kind of, you missed something. I know for sure I'm not the same person. Yeah. I know when I speak to candidates, they're not looking at themselves and their career in the same framework, especially because so many of us have lost loved ones and friends and, you know, and people that we work with and colleagues. So recognizing how we, you know, kind of interact with one another and what we're looking for moving forward, very, very difficult to predict through an algorithm or through, you know, an AI kind of trend. The question that you, I guess, asked about, you know, what is work going to look like, you know, and how does recruiting kind of fit into that? I think there's a little bit of an unknown. I think, you know, I deal with companies all sizes, also from startups to the biggest names in the financial services industry across, you know, from every hedge fund and PE fund and the largest global banks. I think everyone's still trying to figure a little bit of this out. What I can tell you, what I think best guess or where I think we're kind of heading on, you know, what work is going to look like, I think there's many components of that. I'll address, I guess, the first one, the big elephant in the room, which everybody likes to talk about is, you know, I want to work from home or not work from home. And what is remote work going to look like? And how is that mm-hmm. going to really kind of impact our stuff moving forward, right? So I think, you know, we do at RE/MAX Search an annual survey, which actually releasing the results, I guess, next week. And we'll be hosting a webinar and they'll be up on our website as well in terms of, you know, what the results look like. But one of the questions that we ask, you know, amongst hiring managers and amongst candidates is how they envision the future regarding work from home. And mm-hmm. it's fairly interesting because we ask, you know, hiring managers and senior level folks what their company is planning on doing only a very, very small percentage still, you know, respond, you know, maybe 10% that they're planning on having body work 100% remotely. Now, in fairness, the results are somewhat skewed because we get, you know, 3,000-4,000 results of this, but they're primarily financial services type candidates. And again, you know, probably about a third, you look at where they say, hey, you know, we're going to go back, we want to bring everybody back to the office 100% full time. And it's that middle band where we get a little bit of discrepancy. So if we ask candidates that exact same question, almost a third would say they'd rather work from home 100%. And these are the same people responding. It's not like we're distinguishing in terms of within the financial services world, maybe only about 20, 25% envision they would like to go back on a full-time basis to the office. But again, that middle band, that middle 50 to 70%, you know, is really where the flux is. And I think that's what everyone's really trying to figure out right now. In terms of other, you know, pushes that will kind of, I think, enhance or move that needle forward. It's not just the work from home. It's the product of the work you're doing. It's what you want to be doing when you're at work. As I mentioned earlier, this need to do meaningful work has become such a buzzword in the industries. We see so many people leaving, especially once they're a little, you know, mid-management, senior management, leaving the quote unquote rat race of financial services to work for nonprofits, for startups, if they want to stay in financial services, but they want to work for funds that have a real social impact, have a real impact on the environment, things along those, social investing. So there's a lot of different types of, you know, elements of that. I think the second part of it is, what are we doing now in the workplace that we, for example, that we maybe 30 years ago, we had to do a lot more manual type stuff or technology related kind or key punch type stuff. That's all being done for us right now. So what are the jobs moving forward that are going to become obsolete if we start thinking how technology can kind of replace us? And I think the areas that we see the most growth or the most amount of potential longer term potential are those that really do involve that one-on-one, that individual contact. It's not just about, you know, creating great financial reports. It's the person who could deliver those financial reports and present those financial reports. It's not just about bringing clients to the, you know, setting up great websites, which will attract, you know, potential people to look at your organization, but it's in that sales process, how do we close a deal? And that's a human contact. That's a one-on-one, until further notice, that's still, you know, going to be based on. So I think figuring out for candidates how you kind of get involved in a role, which is not a quote unquote, which cannot be commoditized and really will always have long-term value, I think is, perhaps the path that we try and push candidates towards.
Yeah. And I think for anyone that's been listening to the podcast the last several minutes, this is truly the essence of what the future of work is. And you've said something that rings true. It's the decommoditization of workers. And really looking at them as an asset, particularly given today's talent market, we all are in agreement that there is simply not enough supply for the demand. So any of those companies that are trying to negotiate markups or fees at this point in time are really not setting themselves up successfully, considering, you know, what the market actually looks like out there. And to couple that with the purposeful work, and how do you fit that into the status quo and the mindset of the average day worker nowadays, particularly considering the onset of the pandemic? It's inspiring to hear you say that.
I'll just piggyback one more thought of that, if I may. If we look at every company's mission statement or their statement of purpose, you can find on everyone's website, they've got the stuff. Somewhere in there is there the word people or human capital or something about their interaction with that.
Right.
If we go to a purely remote environment, there is no delineation of company X versus company Y versus company Z. So what attracts people to work is just that, is the ability to work with people that are like-minded, similar goal-minded, you know, goal-oriented, things along those lines. So I think if we remove that human element of it, I think we've changed the entire dynamic. I think that's like the bottomless pit. So,
yeah, and I agree. And those are the disadvantages, quite bluntly speaking, of the remote working world, is that human interaction or the lack thereof. How do you couple that with a market that is demanding that sort of notion now is really going to be the big question mark for employers to follow, which is all interesting, right? Because this is leading up to my very next question. We had 3.8 million people resign in 1 month, which equates to about 1.4% of the working population. And the market is as hot as ever, 9.8 million job openings in the month of June, with only certainly a significantly less amount of people actually unemployed through that process. So we are now dealing with, as many experts are calling, the Great Resignation. The mass exodus of workers going through other opportunities or pursuing what is that purposeful work, really what is their calling, the solopreneur, the one that was in the middle of the pandemic, quarantined, and decided to find and pursue a passion in life. I think it was interesting. I can't even recall the statistic, but there was an exorbitant amount of people that filed for their own EIN and then are now are doing their own outlet of work. What is your thought on that? On the Great Resignation. And more than that, a lot of what you guys do on your end is that consultative approach with your client. What is that discussion being had at this moment in time in terms of retention in today's working world?
Sure. So it's a great question. And I think far too often, a lot of clients don't recognize the need to look at retention. They only look at the need for attraction, right?
Right.
And
right.
I would state the case that the war for talent is just the war for retention is part of that entire equation, but I don't think it's anything new. I think as long as I'm in this business, and I'm sure much longer, every company always wants to hire the brightest and the best, and because that's what they think they kind of need for every kind of role. But when you have a team of the brightest and the best, sometimes figuring out who the brightestest and the bestestest, whatever, mm-hmm. Is really somewhat of a challenge, right? And you right. can't have a team of all, star center fielders. You need to figure out how to put a team together and how to really kind of, acclimate people correctly so everyone has the right role. So I think one of the mistakes, you mentioned the retention issue, I think is looking at that stuff on day one. That, it's not just we need somebody for 2 years or we need somebody for, it's recognizing how long we can really provide for them what they need. And when they do leave, it's not a bad thing. I mean, we tend to look at, the resignation or people moving on as a negative thing. Very few people I know who are presidents and CEOs and CFOs started or are working at the same company they started at, 25, 30 years ago. So right. they all recognize in their own career the need to make the move. And yet somehow they feel jilted when a candidate picks up or an employee picks up and leaves them. So I think, recognizing that companies kind of, figuring out exactly what they need to hire. From the candidate perspective, I think there's always that the grass is always greener. And that works everything in life. That's not just your job, right?
Right.
You want the best house. You see the neighbor's got a better house. He's got nicer grass. You want to put in better lawn. You see he's got a nicer park. Right. That's just the way life works, right? And yes. So why would we think that in career would be any different? So we have to recognize that candidates are always going to be, what makes them good candidates is just that, is the ability to want to push the envelope a little bit further and kind of figure out what their career kind of looks like. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, if you look at, we always think that money is going to be the great equalizer in that. And we see over time now that's changing dramatically. I always joke, and I've been making this probably for 30 years, I've been making this joke, my entire business exists on the following six words. And that's, I have a friend who makes, because everybody's looking what that other friend is making, what that other friend is earning, without mm-hmm. recognizing what they're kind of putting into that perhaps. But everybody thinks they're smarter, better, brighter, faster, more talented than the guy next to them, and they should be earning at that same level. So I think the first part of retention is really recognizing what it is really job one. I think the second part of that, I think, is understanding what turnover really means. Is it always bad? By rule, companies like to fire and not be fired, but many, many industries, many organizations figure out the exit policy as part of the entry policy. So for example, if we look at the largest investment banks, they'll hire every year 150, 250, whatever it might be, analyst level people, recognizing that maybe one of them will be around in 10 years. And they build that process along the way. Accounting firms, the same thing. They'll hire 200 people at the junior level. Maybe one makes it to partner, maybe two, it's tough. Law firms. So industries that kind of recognize that. And from a candidate perspective, it's okay, because that the candidates are going there to achieve something as well, to get a certain amount of experience, a certain amount of cachet, a pedigree on their resume. And so recognizing that symbiotic relationship, I think, is really, kind of a key point of that. I think the second part of that is really kind of recognizing the true role that companies and work plays in people's life. Unfortunately, and fortunately, perhaps for some, like myself, work kind of becomes to define you, right? Within 2 or 3 minutes of meeting somebody, a stranger anywhere, the question becomes, hey, what's your name? Where do you live? What do you do? Right. And so mm-hmm. we look at that as a defining factor for us. And so mm-hmm. maybe kind of getting away from that kind of mindset a little bit. So, you know, I think probably helps the kind of process and recognizing that people's needs change over time. What I was looking for as a 30-year-old is not what I'm looking for as a 50-year-old or whatever. And I think, you know, recognizing that is really kind of the key. Having said all of that, I think the retention kind of piece of it, and again, I'll revert back to the RAMAC survey. So, and I don't have it in front of me right now, but, you know, we typically ask questions about what motivates people around work, right? And if it's really about, you know, career growth or financial compensation or a better company. And we see over time, and I think it depends a little bit maybe in terms of seniority, what they're kind of doing, how those things type, you know, really will change. So for example, maybe a third or fourth year, you're really just looking to learn as much as possible. By the time you hit your 10th year, perhaps you're looking to really maximize your compensation. By the time you're in your, you know, 25th year, perhaps it's more about, you know, work-life balance and time off and geography and things along those lines. I think the another part of it, and we, again, it's another question that we ask, is what are we doing for employees that work for us? Are we making them feel mentored, challenged, involved, appreciated, empowered, trusted? You know, these are all buzzwords that really, I think, help to understand, you know, what's in the mindset of somebody. So there's no one answer fits all. It's not a blanket statement. I think every company has to recognize who they are. The last part of it, and again, from a middleman perspective, I could share this, is every job is not an A plus. Every company is not an A plus, but every candidate is not an A plus. The recognition of who you really are by looking in the mirror as an organization goes a long way towards hiring the right types of individuals. So if you're a C plus company, you're always trying to attract A plus talent. Well, clearly every 2 years, they're going to be leaving you because you're they're just not going to fit in long-term. You've got to find people that have the same needs and wants and desires and goals and all that fun kind of stuff. So
the people that match the ethos, right? You know. I think that's fantastic. I love how your approach to this is more of a tactical strategy and the self-analyzation of truly what is going to be defined as successful retention, considering the ethos of the company, the rating of that company, the rating and the overlook in the market right now, the fact that workers value skill sets. It's funny. And even more so with the generational impact of millennials and Gen Zers, you know, there's certain surveys that have come out that say that they value an increased skill set over health insurance, right? So it's completely different yep. shift and analyzing all of those areas and truly defining this amount of time is what is considered retention, successful retention for our company. And if they find new and better opportunities, then great. I think that's only a great sign of maybe that foundation that we were able to provide to them in the meantime. It's totally the successful approach to take. I'm 100% on board with you on that front because it's all transcending itself into what is the future of work. And we can't compare that to what you guys were going through in 1991 with, you know, 10 years, two different companies. It's a different world that we're living in. And I think sure. companies have to take that approach as well. So fantastic insight, Peter. I kind of get excited when I'm talking to you, which makes me a little bit sad because we're going to be wrapping up today's podcast. I always like to ask this question. I think it's a wonderful question for our audience to know, but it's an easy one. So no worries. What is your content diet? What are you reading? What are you analyzing and what's hitting your inbox every day to stay up to date? And what are you doing in your leisure time to stay, you know, up to date intellectually?
Sure. No, I think it's a great question. I think I'm going to answer kind of maybe two or three parts, but the first part is really, and I've always viewed myself as a student of life. I think there's so much, everything out there is a learning experience. It's something I tell my kids all the time. It's something I push my clients, I push my candidates. Everything out there is a learning experience. And that doesn't, you know, so when you look at it, I think life through that lens, I talk to as many people as I can. I interact with as many people as I can. I learn sometimes, you know, more from a guy that I sat next to on the train or on an airplane for a 5-hour ride, you know, to fly to a conference, something that I can learn at the actual conference, right? And I mean that sincerely, just learning people's experience and their journey into how they kind of got where they are and what makes them successful, what they've learned from those challenges, what they've learned from those. So I think, you know, number one, the content diet is kind of, it's all out there just in terms of, you know, just talking to people and interacting with people.
And absorbing and internalizing that interaction, right?
Yeah, I think the second part is maybe a little more formalized. And I mean, I'm a high energy, never sleepy kind of person. So I listen to a ton of podcasts. I try not to limit it to any particular genre. So I listen to, except for politics, I don't really listen to a lot of that stuff. But I will listen to a ton of business podcasts, sports podcasts, entertainment related podcasts, history podcasts. Anything I can kind of get my hands on that I'm, you know, that if I have a half hour to go for a walk or in the car or whatever, I always want to have some kind of content flowing in there. And I think the third part, which is something that's really become, I think, a little bit newer over the course of the last, you know, year and a half, since we've all got to work from home and the ability to interact at conferences and events and, you know, and networking type of things has really, you know, dropped to a minimal. A lot of companies, my firm Remax as well, has really gone the webinar route, right? We've done a lot of, so I've participated in, and I've also hosted a bunch of webinar, you know, related kind of activities. And so I would say, you know, it used to cost, you know, several thousand dollars potentially to go to a, you know, a conference where maybe you wanted to hear two speakers out of the 20 over 3 days. But all these companies have put this content online available for, if not free, very, very low cost, but mostly free. And there's so much out there. So I really tried to take advantage myself of what you can learn and what you can kind of, you know, learn about business and people and just everything in life. But, you know, really, so it's really the podcast route. It's the webinar route. It's the talking to people route. And I think it's also the reading route. I do try and read as much as possible. I would say since I'm commuting less, I'm probably reading less. So that's something I need to work on for the end of 2021 and into 2022. But
that's awesome. So speaking of reading, who would you recommend in terms of an author or particular book that you would, you know, recommend for our audience out there?
I love when I get this question because it really makes me think about what I try and read a lot. So there are the obvious answers, you know, the real business related kind of stuff. I mean, I'm a big fan of Stephen Covey and of course, The 7 Habits, which I try and reread every couple of years. All the Dale Carnegie stuff, I'm a big fan of as well, even though it's a little, you know, people think, oh, it's old and outdated. Nothing new under the sun. I think the third one is maybe a non-business book. I'm a huge fan of Ayn Rand and The Fountainhead. And I read The Fountainhead my formative years in high school. And it had such an impact on me. I've reread it several times since. And for those that are not familiar with the book, it really kind of helps you define what it means to be an independent thinker. And even when the world around you looks totally different and the world, your world may be crumbling because of it, just thinking about how to be a little bit different and how to be an outsider is, you know, it's really you're an insider because you get it and they don't, and the other way around. So I encourage everyone to read The Fountainhead and potentially any other Ayn Rand stuff.
So and we've had a chance to interact before today's podcast session, and you've recommended that book to me, guiltily promoting it here on today's podcast because it's sitting here on my desk and I need to crack it open, but I appreciate the recommendation.
There you go, Angela.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So this has been a wonderful conversation, Peter. Thank you guys so much for sitting with us, and thank you for spending some time and kind of shifting through your world of talent, the future of work, you know, how technology is going to play a part in that. I think we've gotten a really good in-depth conversation going on where you sit with that. Any closing remarks or, you know, how can we get a hold of you and how can our audience find you?
So first off, I really want to thank you again for making the opportunity available. I am, you know, very, very humbled to be able to participate in this type of forum. Because I know your audience is really a savvy audience. And so I appreciate the opportunity to reach them. I think just one thing I'd like to just kind of mention a little bit is having been in the business for 30 years and having a view of the world from this business perspective, it's really very, very rewarding. So of course, yes, I'm in the recruiting space and this is how I make a living. This is how I feed my family. But I can't begin to mention how rewarding it is when I deal with candidates who I've known now for, you know, 10, 15, 20, even some almost 30 years. And I've seen their career trajectory and I see when they've gone from being getting their first job at, you know, at a big four accounting, now being a CFO of a 500 person, you know, global organization and everything along the way. And really being knowing that I played just a real little part of that. They did the hard work, but just knowing that I had a little bit of, impact in that is really very, very rewarding. And it works on the other way, the converse as well. When I deal with clients that I was introduced to 10, 15 years ago that had, you know, 18 employees and didn't know how they were going to make payroll in 6 months, but somehow they figured it out. And I was able to consult with them that are now managing, you know, multi-billion dollar funds, with you know, 200-300 employees, knowing again that I was able to play a little part of that is really very, very rewarding. So I really, you know, I thank the business and the industry, and I thank you for allowing me to kind of share some of that. Lastly, as you mentioned, obviously, the easiest way to find me, obviously, at our website, RamaxSearch.com, RamaxSearch. RamaxSearch, actually named after my two daughters, so a cheap little shout out to them. Go girls. I also can be found on LinkedIn. You know, you can find RamaxSearch or Peter Tannenbaum on LinkedIn. I've got about 20,000 connections. I don't know everybody, but I do try and help everybody out that does reach out to me. The lastly is I'm at a lot of conferences and events and industry related kind of activities. So if you ever see me somewhere or you bump into me in the elevator, or the street, or the sandwich shop, please say hello, you know, tap me on the shoulder. If I can help you in any way, shape or form, that's really what it's about for me at this stage of my life in this business.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love how you gave the insert of the purposeful work that you find behind recruiting and lending that self to many of the candidates that you've been able to help and clients along the way. So you guys follow Peter. He posts some great stuff on LinkedIn. I am part of his network, part of one of those 20,000. So I can tell you that there's a lot of great stuff happening on that side of the social media front as well. But that would be in conclusion to today's session. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you again for Peter for tuning in and sitting with us today. And we will catch you guys on the next Ivy Podcast episode. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.